Broadcasting from Lockport, New York, it's time for The Dads Must Be Crazy. Just three guys raising kids and currently hiding from them in an undisclosed tool shed to talk about parenting, pop culture, and penguins. Or something else that starts with a P. It's Craig, the stay-at-home dad historian and hockey enthusiast. Howie, the stay-at-home dad who used to be a reporter when journalism was a thing. And Bobby, the retired Army vet, Trekkie, and gamer, helping to raise three kids in beautiful Western New York. Now, here's the dads.
Welcome to The Dads Must Be Crazy. I am Craig, joined today by Howie.
Hello, everybody.
And Bobby.
Howdy.
We have had no idea what we're going to do today. We've been talking for 20 minutes just upon anything.
I think it's closer to 30 minutes, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think we've kind of been rolling around pop culture and the current trends of, you know, what's going on right now. But
some stuff appropriate for the podcast, some stuff not.
Mostly not appropriate.
Yeah, mostly not appropriate.
Because we know better than to broadcast all of that. Yeah.
Right. We're about a day early for some of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was trying to think about what we wanted to talk about today, and one of the things that happened this week is going to kind of lead into this. My daughters, the three older ones, the youngest one does not have one of these yet, have Chromebooks to help them with their schoolwork, and that's going to be a huge help come September. Two more weeks before school starts.
1 week for me, and Bobby's already started.
And I may be starting.
That's right.
Maybe.
This whole podcast might take on a different tone at some point in the near future, but go on.
We're edumacated.
Right. So the Chromebooks are your basic laptops. They let you do the stuff they need to do for the basic part of school. One of my daughters is huge into music. She plays four instruments right now and is dabbling in two others. She wants to do a music major and stuff and somehow put psychology in with it at the same time. She went like musical therapy.
I was going to say music therapy would be.
So she does a lot of playing of her instrument. A Chromebook will record just basic stuff. So I was thinking that maybe she should get a MacBook in order to continue her musical education. That way she can put all her stuff together. And we're not an Apple family, but sometimes you just got to take the.
You bite the bullet, you do what you got to do.
Yeah, exactly. And they're really good at music stuff on the MacBooks, which led me to the discussion with my wife about the goals that our children have in life, which now makes me think about what my goals were at specific ages in my life. And I thought we could talk about that a little bit.
This conversation, I'm getting a serious sense of deja vu. Did we discuss having this discussion last week?
We did. A little bit. We touched on it just a little bit.
But we didn't dive into it.
We didn't go into it at all.
Okay. Yep.
I have four girls with four very different personalities. So number one, she wants to do the music and she wants to do psychology type of stuff. And I'm going to make a joke, crazy, no crazy. So it's probably good for her. And the number two, she still doesn't know what she wants to do. She wanted to become a teacher, but she didn't know what type of teacher she wanted to become. Then she said that she was going to go to BOCES to learn how to do cosmetology and hair because then she could pay her way through college. Have
figuring
some income.
Out what she
right.
wanted to do
exactly.
during that. Okay.
Which I thought was a great idea. Now she's kind of shied away from that, and the BOCES thing this year is going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
The way I see it. They may pull it out in the end, but the way I see it happening, it's just going to be a mess. Number three wants to go to Juilliard or Columbia and be on stage and be on Broadway. She doesn't look beyond any of that. She wants to act. She wants to sing. She wants to do that type of stuff. And I don't want to smash her dreams because so few people who get into that actually are successful with it. Let her dream, but she's got to have some kind of like a fallback.
Dream your dreams. Exactly. Make sure that if the dreams don't happen.
Right. There's something else that you can do.
Yeah. She needs that trampoline underneath. So if she does fall from that dream, she'll bounce back real quick and,
right.
and be right where she needs to be.
And Josephine is so young. She wants to be the next Lin Miranda, where the hell his name is.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah. She wants to be the next. She wants to write a play and do that. At 10 or 11 years old, she bounces from idea by the minute, basically.
If not quicker than that, yeah.
Right. I'd like her to have a dream of keeping her room clean.
Yes.
That would be a fantastic goal.
I think you got about a year to wait. My 11-year-old has decided that keeping her room clean is probably the best idea because she found out about a year and a half ago she's allergic to dust. So she has taken it upon herself to more or less maintain a clean room. And by clean, I mean I don't have to go in there and do anything other than maybe dust and vacuum, which I'll take that every time.
A big win for me would be if 3 and 4 who share a room just picked up their clothes. Because clean clothes, dirty clothes, they're all on the floor all the time. It drives me out of my mind. I had to put a fan in. The fan that's blowing on us right now because it's so hot in the house goes upstairs to their room so that they have airflow in there. They're in the worst room in the house for airflow. So it's very difficult for them. I had to put it in their room last night. I had to clear a spot. And the base is only 12-inch diameter.
It's a tower fan, yeah. So anybody who's listening, it's one of those tall tower fans, and you know how wide the base would be. So if you got a clear spot for that, then
It's bad. Yeah. So when I was a kid, and this is where we'll start, and then we'll move on to what we're doing for our kids, because probably some of the stuff that we lived through and then how our parents reacted may define how we've reacted as parents ourselves. When I was a kid, I had ideas right from the get-go that, first of all, I wanted to be a fireman because Emergency was my favorite television show. I loved that show. Roy and Johnny, they were the bee's knees. I wanted to be on that show saving people's lives because at 5 years old, you don't realize that that's fake.
True.
But you knew that they got respect. Everybody liked them. Right. And they had a cool job, and that's what you wanted to do.
Yep. And if I couldn't do that, I wanted to be Eric Estrada so I could ride a motorcycle around with the cool sunglasses. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't even know who the other guy was, but I just remember watching every episode of that TV show when I was a kid.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I believe I saw this somewhere. Was it Eric Estrada's partner on that show is Chris Pine's real-life dad, correct?
Chris Pine's real-life dad is definitely on Chips.
Okay, because I know that somewhere or another there was a connection there.
Yep.
But that's my pop culture tidbit.
Worf was on Chips, too.
Yeah, well, the cool thing is you
every time he got on the bike, he said, it's a good day to die.
I'm sure he did.
You know, he's like riding off into the sunset. Kapla.
Takpa. Takpa. Yes.
Yeah, pretty much. But you've seen the movie Chips that they just made recently with Dax Shepard.
Right.
Or Dax.
It is Dax Shepard. I haven't
seen Shepard.
It.
Oh, my God.
I haven't seen it.
Him and who's the other guy?
I don't
know. He was the guy in Shooter. Anyway, I can't remember his name. And what's sad is he's a really good actor, and I like the movies he's in. Michael Pena is his name. And so, obviously, he plays Eric Estrada's character. Dax Shepard plays the other guy. You got to watch it.
Okay.
Anyway, back to what you were saying.
So then I got over that pretty quickly, because when you're that young, you can get over things. Then the next big thing was, I wanted to be an astronaut. I still want to be an astronaut. Let's put that on the table right now. If NASA came to me today, or if that dirtbag Elon Musk came to me today and said, do you want to go into space? I'd be like,
no, do the ship.
I'd say, heck to the yeah.
He's going to be like, I'm just kidding. You called me a dirtbag, so the heck with that idea.
I have a whole thing about Elon Musk that I don't think he's as great as people make him out to be, but
Speaking of outer space, quick fact. There is, the people on the International Space Station are actually closer to civilization. Actually, what was it? Like, there's a certain spot when the International Space Station hovers over, like, the South Pacific. Like, there's nothing there.
Right.
They're closer to that spot than anybody else on the planet.
Like Easter Island or something weird like that. Like Christmas Island or something that's way out in the middle of nowhere.
No, like there's no island. There's no nothing as far as I know. It's just a spot in the middle of the ocean, and it's like 1,000 miles from...
I can believe.
Well, they're only
everywhere.
Like 112 miles or something like
they're
that.
They're like 241 or something above. So they're actually closer to that spot
than anybody
outer space
else is.
Than anybody else on the planet.
Except for Thor Heyerdahl on his Kon-Tiki. I have a pop culture reference neither one of you knew.
Who's on the Kon-Tiki?
Thor Heyerdahl. Back in the 60s and 70s, he got on a raft from Polynesia and was trying to prove that Easter Island and the west coast of South America could have been peopled from, like, out in the Pacific.
So, like, Polynesia and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a cool theory.
Yep. And his raft was the Kon-Tiki.
I remember hearing about the Kon-Tiki in a movie that Eminem was in. other than that, it wasn't that reference.
Okay.
So
the only tiki I'm aware of is the tiki room in Disney World.
All right. Well, anyway, back to goals and dreams and stuff like that.
Okay.
When I got to my formative years where you can actually start making rational decisions on what you want to be, though being an astronaut is still a rational decision, no matter what age you make it, just saying. And I'm going to Mars, and I'm going to find out that there really is a face on Mars, but
just
besides
the point. Just make it to, 2063 when we start colonizing the moon and there's Lake Armstrong and all those millions of people, you know?
There we go.
Yeah.
I'll only be 90.
Very nice reference, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It's a great movie, too.
It's like you can see New Berlin.
Even Lake Armstrong. Looks a lot different in my time. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So probably the longest dream that I've had was to be an author. And right. We talked a little bit about this, and my dad had no idea why are you always reading, why he was writing, always writing in a notebook, what is going on, why are you doing nothing? Which is probably not the right way to
promote someone's dreams.
Promote the dreams, right. And so I've been trying to do that. I've been published on small things. I've had 2 picture books published and a book on veterans monuments, and then plus all their articles that have been in the local newspapers and stuff. So I've been published. Now I'm getting closer to being published with an actual book, but I've been working on it forever. And that was one of the dreams that gets stuck in your head. And when it comes to my kids, they may have dreams that I don't agree with, but I don't understand what they like and what they don't like yet.
But at the same time, the whole reason we started this podcast to begin with is because we're coming at it from a modern dad's point of view. So while you're saying you may not understand what they want to do or may not understand what their likes and dislikes are, you're coming at it completely differently than your dad would have come at the same thing with you.
Right. So I'm not shooting them down.
Right.
On some of the stuff that I think is far out there, I'm still supporting them, but I'm not going, yeah, you know what I mean? There's not the Howard Dean moment behind.
See, I don't know. Maybe y'all's dads were as different than mine, because my dad, like, not saying that he didn't support my dreams or anything, but he was like, look, there's 3 things in life that you got to do. You got to get a job, you got to pay taxes, and don't smoke crack. He goes, then you'll be fine.
Those are pretty good rules.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's pretty much what I got. I mean, he's like, whatever you want to do, pay your taxes, make money off of it, don't smoke crack. Okay.
Or find a sugar mama.
Well, that was never an option, but it is now. No. But yeah, I mean, hell, my kids don't even know what they want to be at this point, you know, and I've got a 14-year-old, a 10-year-old, and an 8-year-old.
Yeah, the 10 and 8 will have no idea, but you should start seeing.
The 14 is, you know, I want to go to college. Well, what do you want to go to college for? Because everybody goes to college.
We had that problem when we were growing up, because that's the whole wave of everybody has to go to college.
To get a good job.
Right.
But now what America needs is, you know, carpenters, and they need skilled tradesmen and skilled laborers, because, you know, infrastructure crumbles.
Yes.
Eventually. You know, the road system was built back in, what, the 50s, the highway system, something like that.
It was an Eisenhower idea, right?
It was.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we've got plumbing.
To move troops.
Bridges. Yeah. There actually has to be, every so often, there has to be a certain
straight
amount
area
of straight area so
plane.
It can land planes. And I was telling my oldest, I was like, look, you don't have to go to college and get a bachelor's in something or a master's in something to make a good, decent living. Like, an electrician, like, those guys can make up to, like, what is it, $125 an hour, depending on what you're doing.
Crazy amount of money.
I mean, plumbers and carpenters, I mean, pest control guys and gals, welders, oh my God, welders make a crap ton of money. I mean, yeah, you'd be a very small portion of welders who are of the female gender.
We have a friend who's a welder.
I remember you telling me that, you know, and she makes a crap ton of money doing it.
A lot of money, yep.
They need welders, because if we were having this conversation, like, the tradesmen are, you know, 60, 65, they're getting ready to start retiring. We've got to have somebody to come and backfill those guys.
Right. I think electricians' average age is like 60. Wasn't your dad an electrician?
My dad was a master electrician, yeah. So he, you know, he passed early, you know, so before he could even retire. It was what I was telling my daughter. I was like, you don't have to go to school. Like, get an apprenticeship. You know, you can do that. I'm like, or you go to a 2-year trade school, and then you can work off that debt. It's going to be a lot less expensive than tuition, which there is some noise going on right now going, hey, if we're doing school online right now, like university, we want tuition lowered because I'm not using your facilities.
Right.
So, but that's just something for a whole nother time. But yeah, the kids, they have no idea what they want to do.
But the question I have for you now is, your dad's an electrician when you're growing up. Did you know at an early age you wanted to go into the military, or was there another something else that you wanted to do before you got to that point?
Honestly, I had no idea what in the hell I wanted to do.
That was mostly my thing. I wanted to write, but I didn't know how I wanted to support myself in the meantime.
My thing was I wanted to play soccer and I wanted to chase girls. And that, I mean, honestly, and I'm not trying to be crude, but that's what I wanted to do. I was your typical horny teenage male.
And there you go, playing soccer. At least you know how to run fast to chase them. There you go.
Or run from their dads or boyfriends.
That too.
There you go. But, you know, never once did I want to be an electrician. Like, I didn't want to follow in my father's footsteps, because he got out of the military after Vietnam and then kind of fell into it and then developed a love for being an electrician. I got zapped a few times. It was like, nope, this ain't for me. Let's be honest. It hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's not fun. All the men in my family have been in the military. So they were Vietnam. You know, they were in the Korean War. They were in World War One, World War Two. They fought in the Civil War.
So was it expected that you join the military?
No, it was. It's never expected in our family that you join. It's just, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it, because every male in my family has joined the military.
I wanted to at one point, and I asked my dad for advice. He goes, if you want to do it. We'll support you with what you want to do. He goes, personally, I'm glad you don't have to.
Yeah, all volunteer military.
No, like, my dad was drafted. No,
my dad was drafted.
He had a single-digit draft number, so.
Mm. Yeah, so my dad got drafted, and then my mom and dad got married. Yeah, so I mean, I went into the military and was like, I'll do this for 4 years, get the college fund, you know, the GI Bill, and then I'll come out, go to school, and figure out what in the hell I want to do. And then I was like,
this isn't so bad.
I was like, I made some rank. I'm in charge of some stuff. I got some responsibility. Pay and benefits are pretty good. And, they're going to give me this huge bonus if I stay in. I'm going to stay in. And so I did that. And then I went to do a realist again. And I was like, I got more rank and I've got more responsibility and my paycheck's bigger. And they're going to pay me even more of a bonus this time. So I reenlisted. Every time I reenlisted, I got a bonus.
You're not getting rich off the military, though.
No. It's not designed for you to get wealthy at all. Like, it's never going to happen. And it should never happen.
Should be a fair wage, though.
When I came in, I was making less than $12,000 a year after taxes. It was bare bones.
And to me, and I'm going to put this out there right now, if you're serving in the military, active military, you don't pay taxes. You don't pay taxes on an income. That would be a perk that I would give to the military.
Well, the funny thing is the military's paid for by taxes.
Right.
But then they're going to give you that cut of the taxes, but then they're going to take a percentage back to go back into the tax coffers.
Yeah, and it's so...
It's hilarious.
It's silly.
And especially if you're in a combat zone, no tax paid
but
whatsoever.
But guess what? Here's the thing. States actually get to tax the military pay. So the federal taxes that pay the federal military, the states actually get a piece of that as a tax. So federal taxes that we've all paid to go to the federal government sometimes end up going to the state. That way,
we're discussing stuff that is
way off topic.
It's above my pay grade.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm like, this is.
But if you think about it, I mean, it's kind of what happens. But
right.
Anyway, I mean, so I kind of fell in the military, did that for 20 years. I'm 41. I still have no idea what in the hell I want to do. Like, I've got a couple of prospects that are out on the horizon right now. One where I complete my degree and I stay in the field that I'm working in right now. There's another one where I go back to work for the government and I stop going to school completely because, let's be honest, I'd have to do something really bad to get fired by the government, in all honesty. But I would make decent money. The benefits are outstanding. I wouldn't need to go back to school. I could just stop school and work for the government and on a 9-to-5 and be fine. So I
get 20 more years in.
I probably wouldn't even do that. I'd probably do closer to 15 and then just be done with it.
You'd be drawing two pensions, though, which would be pretty darn good.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, when I was growing up, I was always told, man, you're such a diplomat. You're going to be a lawyer, or, oh, you're so smart, you're going to be a doctor. And I was like, well, regarding the whole doctor thing, as I've mentioned many times on this thing before, my wife's a physician. I met her when I was an undergrad, and she's a year younger than I am. So when I followed her to med school, one day when I had the day off from work, I sat in on a pharmacology course. After 10 minutes sitting in the course, when I determined that they were speaking a foreign language that I had no idea, I'm like, oh, I recognize the, I recognize maybe, I recognize and.
Is it maybe I understand
and
this?
And I looked at my wife, I'm like, can I borrow your laptop? She goes, sure, what's up? And like, we're whispering back and forth. I take the laptop and I just started reading ESPN articles because I had no idea what the heck they were talking about. At that point, I realized, yep, medical anything was never going to happen. I struggled in science courses in high school. I couldn't do it. It didn't mesh with my brain.
That was one of my close calls. There was a point where I was going to go to school to become a pharmacist through Trocare College. And then I backed out because I was working at a fantastic job. You've heard the story before. For a pharmacy, I quit that job so I could meet Wendy.
You're right. Bottom line for me, though, was when it came to science, after freshman year of high school, not even college, high school, I found it very difficult to absorb and retain any information regarding, you know, what's this vein here, what's this muscle here, what's this bone. I there wasn't that light bulb going on where like, oh, I get this. I did, for whatever reason, it didn't jive with me. But on the flip side, I really enjoyed English courses, history courses, and so on. And when it came down to writing and talking to people, I'm like, oh, this is actually kind of fun. So my sophomore year of high school, I spoke to the athletic director. I'm like, hey, can I start doing the public address for the basketball games? So for 2.5 years in high school, I was doing, you know, here's starting lineups for the Huskies. Here's the visiting lineup. And I was doing a lot of that. And I wound up going to Syracuse thinking, oh, this is great. I'm going to be the voice of this and that and the other thing. But what they don't tell you and what they should tell you is that when you're going to a college, you're going to be among people who are at the very worst as good as you. And in many cases, many of them are much better than you. Now, that's not saying, this is the metaphorical you, the proverbial you. So I've got friends across the country in various places. One person has a World Series ring. One person, if I'm watching the NBA All-Star game, I can see her on the sidelines. You know, these are people I legitimately am friends with and I will talk to. For one course that I just took this past summer, I was a day late for an assignment. So to make up for it, I reached out to another friend of mine who I hosted radio shows with. I asked him a few questions, and then I linked it to a TED Talk he gave in North Dakota at one point. And when these are people, I'm like, I know people, but my life, while not as
glamorous,
that's a great word for it, while not as glamorous as theirs, has been, to this point, equally as fulfilling by being a community newspaper reporter, by being a stay-at-home dad, and telling other people's stories. Because when you become a newspaper reporter, which I, as anybody who's listened to this podcast or read anything I've written for Niagara's Water Cooler at all would tell you, I take a while to say anything.
Right.
And you cannot take a while to say something when you are either on TV or on the radio. In a newspaper, you have much more space because you could take any nightly newscast and take the text of that newscast. It fills up about 2/3 of the front page of any daily newspaper in the country. That's all it fills up. It's not as long as you think it is. It's 30-minute newscast, but when you factor in commercials, you factor in the banter back and forth, you're looking at about anywhere from 15 to 1 minute long stories, and they're all like large point fonts.
So is journalism an early goal for you, an early dream?
It became one.
Okay.
I actually was editor of my high school paper. I worked with the yearbook staff. And the one thing I regret not having done, because I wound up in newspaper rather than on air or behind the scenes at a broadcast medium, the one thing I regret not having done was honing my skills at the daily newspaper on campus. That's the one thing I wish I had done. But in the grand scheme of things, right now, it wouldn't have mattered. Because as I got to my senior year, my priorities shifted. It's like, okay, I want to do this, and I'm going to apply for this. I'm with this person now. Well, what is she going to do? Where am I going to go? What can I do that will keep me close to this person? You know, your priorities shift and your goals.
So did you want to be on television or something at the beginning?
I really wanted to be on TV at the beginning. I mean, I've still got my resume tape at home, but after I applied to a bunch of different places, and somewhere in Minnesota, somewhere in Alabama, somewhere in Alaska, I never got interviews anywhere. And then I, sure enough, got an interview in a newspaper where I was an intern in high school in Olean. And I started there and wound up being my own bureau. And it was nice.
So you had college friends who went on to become voices of specific teams?
One is the voice of a major league team.
Okay.
One legitimate friend, and when I say legitimate friend, like this is somebody, this is the person I reached out to on Facebook, because we hosted shows together on the radio. He is now a play-by-play voice for a couple different sports on ESPN. Another one is, this is another person who, if I wanted to, I could reach out to, talk to. This is somebody who is a, I want to say he's a Fox Sports somewhere down in Houston. Another person works for the NBA. Two people are producers in Tampa for various networks down there. At one point, one of them was a member of a Tampa network, and we were in a free fantasy baseball league, and he's like, hey, guys, we're going to bring somebody else into the league this year. And we were waiting to see who this person was, and sure enough, I wound up being in a fantasy baseball league. It was free with former Cy Young winner Frank Viola, which was really
that
pretty
was cool.
And for my avatar that year, I took a picture of my baseball glove, which was a Frank Viola model glove. And I just put, like, hey, check this out.
But you did get to be the voice of something, though. And
yes,
you may
I did.
Say that it's minor, but in an area like Orleans County or Niagara County, it's a big deal. It was a big deal. And we were good at it.
And we had fun. We're talking Lockport hockey, right? And what I really took from that was the fact that, you know, I was able to handle hockey play-by-play, which anybody will tell you who's done it, it's easily the hardest one to do.
I was terrible at the beginning, and I was passable at the end.
I would like to say I was passable at the beginning and better at the end. Would that be a fair assessment of my work?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was much more comfortable doing color analysis and stuff, which there's an opening in NBC that I have applied for.
I'm going to backtrack to something Bobby said a few minutes ago about what you just said.
Okay.
All right. Bobby, we're talking about Mike Milbury, the color analyst for the NHL on NBC.
Okay. I've hated him for years.
He is known in the New York metro area for being the one of the worst general managers of a hockey team ever. I determined when somebody said this is the trade he made, it would essentially be your Cowboys giving away Emmett Smith, Troy Aikman, and Michael Irvin just before the Super Bowl runs of the early 90s for a first overall pick, a fifth overall pick, and three practice squad players, and getting the first overall pick and fifth overall pick to be backup linemen. That is essentially the trade he made. He's that bad of a GM. Meanwhile, he's considered the expert analyst. And he was recently targeted, more or less, by social media for saying that he made a comment that was...
It was ill-advised.
It was ill-advised. In another era, it would be laughed at. It wasn't exactly very glowing towards women. And you could really make the case he was insulting all the players. You could. I'm not going to
both men and women.
He was insulting everybody.
Yes.
The bottom line is it was based off what other people have said in the media. Comparatively, it was pretty benign. However, he's been so bad for so long, this was the final straw.
The tolerance was there. The tolerance was done.
People were just looking for a reason to get rid of this guy. And sure enough, there he went. But you know the comment you made about you were going to college to play soccer and chase girls?
No, I wasn't going to college to do that. I was doing that in high school.
Well, but it was a comment that was even less obvious than that, that essentially got him canned or told to walk away.
So my comment
just
was
worse? No.
No, I'm not saying Bobby's comment was bad. I'm saying that's how benign.
No, I think it was a little worse than that.
Okay, well, then maybe it was I don't know. But
especially in a time when you have the National Women's Hockey League, which is struggling, puts a fantastic product on the ice.
Oh, yeah.
You can't belittle women by saying that they're a distraction to the game of hockey, which is basically what he said.
He said, you know, we're in the bubble here, and it's a good thing that there's no women here to distract the players. And that's more or less what he said, and it came at such a time, like Craig said, you can't say stuff like that. It's moronic. It's idiotic. Given what has been said recently on larger platforms regarding the NBA players, though, I think what some of people have said about them has been worse.
I think people are just fed up with Mike Milbury, too. So
look, don't get me wrong. I'm happy to see him go. I'm just a little annoyed that it was a comment that wasn't as offensive as it could have been or should have been that got him to go.
But now there's an opening at NBC, and I am a great color analyst for hockey.
Sean Avery is campaigning for himself to take that job.
I think I could take him in a street fight.
I don't know.
Sean Avery would whoop my ass. There's no doubt about it.
Sean, I mean, either in a verbal fight or a physical fight, one way or the other.
Speaking of ass whoopings, so what I wanted to be when I was a kid, like what I legitimately, and it took me a minute.
A rodeo clown.
No. I actually wanted to be a sensei. I wanted to be a black belt because everybody, you know, Van Damme was big in the late 80s and the early 90s.
Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal was another one with his Aikido, but he's like a 7th or 8th degree black belt in it. Like, he's legit.
Kung Fu Panda.
Po.
Then you've got everybody knows Bruce Lee, and then there's, you know, Michael J. White floating around. I mean, there's
Chuck
all
Norris.
These, yeah, there's all these awesome martial artists, and like you, I got distracted is probably a bad word, but you know, I
your
got
priorities a, changed.
They did because I had a girlfriend at the time. I was, you know, training in karate when I was a teenager, and then I started foregoing karate so I could spend time with her. And then eventually just quit going altogether. And then I went off to the military, and I was never in one place long enough to do any good training.
So in the military, did they have any type of, I don't know, classes on base where you could do that type of stuff?
Not necessarily on base, but the Army has what they call combatives.
Okay.
And it's a lot of stripped down Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Well, I know like the Israelis, they have the Krav Maga. I was wondering if like the U.S. military had something like where you could learn a martial art as part of the military.
That would be fantastic. Like the combatives programs are getting really, really good. But I started over a year ago here in Niagara County. So I train here, obviously, and I'm on this journey. And because I'm on this journey, you know, my martial arts journey, because it's something I still want to do.
A journey starting as a dream one night. Bobby decides
to give up smoking and drinking to help further his quest. So I mean, I did
the karate-tized zone.
So what I did is, you know, I gave up smoking, I gave up drinking because it obviously that stuff degrades your physical fitness and decreases stamina and whatnot. So, you know, I gave that stuff up.
I can do anything when I've been drinking.
Of course you can, including get a ride to the emergency room. Because I've seen too many hold my beer, watch this, you know, stuff. I've seen those moments all my life. But no, I mean, it's a journey that I'm on. Like, for right. me, it's a thing. I've always wanted to do it, and now I'm actually doing it. I'm out of the military. I'm retired from that. I've settled down. Like, I'm not going anywhere.
Did you get the itch to move in the last year or so, though?
You know what? Like, I still haven't even been in New York State for 3 years yet. I'm coming up on it in a year. In a year will be my 3 month anniversary. Actually, no, wait. Tomorrow.
Say that again. And tomorrow will be your 3 year anniversary?
Here in New
okay.
York State.
Okay.
December 1st will be my 3 years retired from the Army.
Ah, okay.
So, but it took me a little bit to figure out what I wanted to do when I retired. Do I want to work in insurance? So I gave that a go. Not for me, because the customers.
And you retired young, relatively speaking.
At 38,
right.
from the Army. But in the Army, that's kind of old.
I mean, that's still 20 years worth of,
right.
you know.
It's, yeah.
So.
It's 20 years, but I mean, yeah, it's, you know, you've got 20 years. They look at more or less the time you have in. So you could be 45, but only be in for like 15 years. And they're like, okay, yeah, you're getting up there. But you're 38 and, you know, you've got 19 years in and you're only a few months from retirement. They're like, damn, you're old, you know, because it's the miles you put on your body.
I put about as many miles on my body as I do in my car, so I don't move a lot.
We're talking yeah. miles on the body, and we were mentioning Indiana Jones. I mean, it's not the years, it's the mileage.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, I train karate, and, you know, I'm after my black belt, you know, and I don't want it for the prestige and all that it would normally accompany
personal
it.
Personal satisfaction.
Well, it's something I've always wanted to do since I was, you know,
yeah.
little. I love, you know, where I train because it's not a belt factory. If you don't measure up,
you're not
you
getting
know,
the belt.
You're not getting the belt.
It's like, not an automatic graduation.
No, it's not like your parents pay me money. I train you. I give you a belt. Keep parents happy. He's like, if you're unhappy and you leave the dojo, then you just leave the dojo. Like, no skin off my back. He's like, I'm not producing. It's not a belt factory, and I'm not going to have people running around with belts that they don't deserve. Because ultimately, it comes back at the end of the day, and, you know, dojo gets a bad name. Every belt that you get, you definitely earn. And so for me, there's a certain satisfaction in putting in that work and going, you know, 3 and 4 nights a week, sweating, working, helping instruct on some other of the, you know, smaller classes and being on this journey. So for me, it's like, it's always been a dream, but I'm actually like on my way to accomplishing that. And I think that's pretty cool. So
it is awesome.
I was going to ask you, Howie, you have probably only one of your kids who may have an idea of what he wants to do when he grows up. Has he given any indication?
All right. We're talking about my oldest who turns 14, 2 days from now.
Okay.
Or from the recording of this. And his interests are almost always intermixed with history and architecture.
Okay, first of all, tell him history doesn't pay.
Well, I can tell him that. And there have been times
it
when...
It pays... in how you feel, but right. There's not a lot of monetary.
He can walk around like, I know that that's incorrect, and I'm like, well, great, it's not going to pay the bills just because you know it's incorrect.
Trust me, I know that.
And you and he have had conversations about this in the past where he's tried to quiz you, and you're like, nope, that's wrong. Nope, that's right. Try reading this. And he loves reading up on different historical events, and he will sit down and choose to watch a documentary over choosing to watch an entertaining film.
Now, that's where he could make money, is if he made documentaries, because... If you're a good filmmaker and you make a good documentary on history, you're going to make some money.
Right.
I mean, you're not making Tom Cruise money.
No.
But you're making good money. And that's probably the only place you're going to make good money.
Again, I don't know if he's interested in that, but he also has been for a long time interested in building things, architecture, and so on. And he's fortunate in that most of his classes to this point, which have included 10 credits worth of college courses that he's entering his freshman year, have come pretty easy to him.
That's
so
good.
He's done well. But again, he's just entering his freshman year. He hasn't taken anything that's insanely difficult yet. So I'm waiting to see what happens. And as he progresses through school now, what is he going to... Is he going to continue to be interested in these things? Is he going to continue to want to look at this and look at that and say, oh, I like this? So while I'm not telling him, no, don't do that, I'm saying, all right, listen, I'm going to get you this book because I know you're going to like it. Or I'm going to get you this book because I know you're going to like it. Or I'll get you this kit to build something because I know you're going to like that. But on the other hand, when you're done reading this or when you're done building this, read this book too. This is fiction. Expand your horizons a little bit. What I don't want him to be is so narrow in focus to the point where he misses all of the forest by focusing on just like three trees. You know what I mean? So that's the one thing I worry about with him. My other two at this point are just so... happy-go-lucky that
they're only 11 and 6.
Yeah,
here's what I worry about, and it's kind of along the same lines as what you're talking about. So obviously the big elephant in the room is COVID-19,
right?
Not the common cold, but the one that's really messing some folks up. Things like drama, is that going to get canceled? Don't know, probably. So if they go to a strictly online model, you know, and you don't have all these extracurriculars, you know, like athletics, cheer, band, drama, Future Farmers of America, all these other activities that kids love to do.
The culture.
Exactly. Is it going to stifle their interests in those if they had them? So inadvertent, so is it possible, and I think it is, that COVID-19 could inadvertently shuffle some kids' interests away from things that they really love into things that are more attainable because of the social distancing and online environment in which we seem to be operating in now?
I'm going to answer that in a way that you might not expect. I think that for as many people as trend in the direction you're mentioning, you'll get equally, or at least a portion of the people trending in the opposite direction.
My point is, though, is it's affecting change.
It is.
It is. And you're answering, you're saying it's doing this and you're doing that, so...
There will, let's put it this way. Change is inevitable.
No matter
what happens.
But is it more than normal?
I think it would be possible.
I think it's possible that COVID's affecting it more than normal.
I'm going to relate this to sports, and you, Craig, might be able to appreciate what I'm about to say a little bit more than Bobby, only because this is hockey related. I'm sorry. Do you remember when the NHL lost the whole season? I think it was 2004-05.
Yep.
Okay. So they lose an entire season. They come back and they had an abbreviated 2005-06 season, correct?
Yep.
All right. So when they come back in 2005-06, what do they have? They have two crops of rookies. Not one, two.
Because junior still went on, and so did AHL and all
that. That's right. So you not only had the rookie season of... I believe it was the rookie season simultaneously of Crosby and Ovechkin, was it not?
I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure it was Malkin and Ovechkin, or Malkin and Ovechkin, or Malkin. Two of those three started the same year, from what I can recall. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. No big deal. All I remember with that season is going to the Messier jersey retirement. But the point I'm getting at, and Bobby, this reads into your point, is right now with so many extracurriculars being put on the back burner, while there might be people who choose to, like, oh, I want to be in the play, I want to be singing, I want to be in the band, I want to play this sport, those are the people who you would have expected would have been doing it anyway. But for some of them who might otherwise have not done that, but maybe in the back of their mind has always thought, you know what, maybe I should give it a try. Or with it not being available to them right now, thinking, maybe I want to give it a try when it comes back, they might be more inclined to give it a try when it comes back, because the whole stigma of somebody pointing to them saying, ha ha, you're in this, or ha ha, you're doing that, isn't there right now because so much is virtual.
Well, I'm sitting here going, the kids that would have naturally gone the FFA route, because it's what they've been interested in. So now they get into high school, they want to do the FFA. Those that were in band in junior high, intermediate, and all that want to naturally be in band in high school. But let's say those type of extracurriculars get squished because of COVID.
They had to fill their time somewhere else.
Now it causes them to... It's not the root cause of them developing a new interest, but because they have to fill that time, now they're more interested in something else. So you're getting less hands-on and you're more virtual. So, and those that would normally want to go virtual, they're like, you know what? Everybody's doing this now. The servers are bogged down. Forget this. I'm going to go build workbenches and I'm going to teach myself how to be a plumber or something. And now those guys get involved. I mean, I get what you're saying, but what I'm saying is is it affecting kids' natural path of progression? Because some people are just born to do things and they get an idea in their head. They're like, I'm going to go do this because this is what I want to do. This is what I'm interested in. But then when COVID shuts all that down, like you said, Craig, they have to fill their time. So now they divert their time, their free time, somewhere else.
They may find a new interest.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
So those that might have, you know, said they want to get into animal husbandry because, you know, we need cows and dairy milk and all that stuff. Now they're not doing that. And all of a sudden, Joe, who's going to be a farmer, is now Joe, the IT guy.
Or Joe goes to a business class and now he can now build a multi-million-dollar farming outfit.
I'm not saying that it's all negative. I mean, there are positive effects of this as well. And I think we have to look at that because so much is negative, negative, negative. And, you know, all three of us being parents, we're all dealing with this right now with our kids because...
I don't think you ever want to tell your kid and or any child that they can't do something based on your personal opinion of what that is.
Yeah.
With the exception being if you're out in public and they start bringing up a topic that really is so divisive in public, you tell them, you talk about this elsewhere.
I have heard from an educator who's not from around here, so I don't want to make anyone think I'm throwing someone under the bus, who said that he was he had a student who needed to go to art class, and he goes, well, my class is more important than art class. You can do your little drawings at home. I don't ever want to hear a parent or a teacher say that, because what if that art class is the reason the kid comes to school?
That actually happened to a bunch of my classmates when I was a senior in high school. I was in select chorus. I sang in high school. Okay. So I actually got to go to Russia. So we left and it was a 2-week spring break in a row. So we left right around that Friday before spring break. We got back on Sunday or Monday of the end of spring break. And all told, we were the only American chorus at this festival in Moscow. We represented the school and, for that matter, the country very well. We took home top marks. And at most, any of us would have missed up to 3 days of class total. And there were teachers, I remember, giving some of my classmates a hard time because... Like, well, you were just over singing just, you know, on a trip. You need to get this done or you need to do... I'm like... I approached the assistant principal and I said, this is not right, because we just went, we had a full-fledged itinerary. This was a Board of Education approved trip. We had 11 chaperones for 36 students. We did this, this, and this. I could show you all the pictures. I could show you everything we did. We were not alone, with the exception of going to sleep. Nobody was alone. So I don't know what the problem that these teachers have. Meanwhile...
You did your performance. You learned culture.
We went to the Hermitage. We went to Red Square. We went to the Kremlin. Went to St. Basil's Cathedral. Went to all these different places, right? And I explained to the assistant principal, I said, I find that we are being unfairly criticized because we are not part of the in-crowd, or we were not students of an in-crowd teacher, because the French club went to Montreal or went to Paris, and when they came home, the 12 students who went, all they told us wasn't where they went. They told us what they had to drink and all the alcohol they had. Now, unless I am mistaken, nobody in the high school is 21 years of age. So can you please talk to this teacher, and tell them to shape up, because this is not right. So to your point about, well, my class is more important, like, no, every class is important. Now, there is some stuff that you will learn in a class that you're never going to really use, depending on what you do with it, but everything is usable to some point based on what you're doing. I mean, everything has a purpose.
Right.
You know, Bobby, I'll tell you a quick military story. I was actually talking to my brother, and he was in Air Force ROTC. So his final exam, his senior year, it was a mechanical engineering thing. And he goes into the class. He had missed 10% worth of the class because it was a 10-week trimester thing where he was going to college. And he had missed one full week because of an Air Force ROTC camp or something. So he goes into the final exam, and he told me this the other day. He's like, Howie, I looked at the questions. There was only two of them. There was one on the front page and one on the back page. And I looked at them, and I almost started crying because I evidently had missed all I needed to learn for these two things. So I just wrote this on one. I wrote one line on the front and one line on the back and turned it in. And a couple days later, he said he was walking in his... this is an example, by the way. Ultimately, the point of this is an example of a professor or a teacher who gets it. He said he saw the professor while my brother was still in his flight ROTC stuff. And he says, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And he says, you're in ROTC. How's it going? He goes, well, it's going well. He goes, and my nephew's thinking about doing this. What can you tell me about it? So my brother gave him the lowdown. He says, and is this your pilot uniform? He goes, yes, sir, it is. He goes, so you're never going to use what I was teaching you in class in real life? He goes, probably not, sir. He goes, okay, good. That explains what happened on the final exam. Well, I'm going to give you the lowest passing grade possible. You have a good time flying planes for the Air Force. My brother just started laughing. He goes, thank you so much, because he needed the course to graduate. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, this is somebody who gets it. He's like, what good would it have done the professor to fail my brother and have them, you know, be delayed doing whatever? Like, this is one of those things where you actually have to understand the context with which things take place. So, and if I wound up throwing my brother under the bus there, I apologize, but it's a story he told me, and I'm sure he's told other people too.
And that's actually a really cool story. I mean, because you have some guys that, and gals, and LGBTQ+. They're great at whatever it is they do, but they need a degree to actually go and do it. But there's like one BS class that doesn't even fit in the degree.
Math.
it doesn't fit in the degree. And you're like, I'm going to get held up because I can't pass this one course.
Math.
Yeah. I had to take a math course for a broadcast journalism degree.
You know, like,
go figure.
You've been underwater basket weaving for your entire life. Okay. So you need a degree in it so you can be a professional underwater basket weaver. Right. Now all of a sudden they have a
math
course and you're like, aside from counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, how many baskets I've completed, why do I need statistics?
Right. No, I see exactly where you're coming. I mean, you're coming from. It's one of those things where, like, we've discussed already, you know, Craig's thinking of going back to school. You're going back to school. I'm going back to school. And, you know, I'm looking forward to getting the chance to interact with students at some point in the not too distant future where they're like, why am I going to need this? I'm like, well, because someday you're going to be talking to your kid or to somebody else, and you're going to realize, wait a minute, I learned the lesson from this story, and it applies here. Or, you know what? This whole moral of the story thing, it actually makes sense in real life. How do you relate what you're reading to your life? And if you can't find something that you relate to in a story, well, then the story is not for you. It doesn't mean there's not other stories that are for you. You know what I mean?
It doesn't make the story bad. I know that some people throw a book out and say it's terrible because they couldn't relate to it. Well, it just doesn't work for you.
Exactly. Actually, yeah. When I was talking to a former teacher of mine, she mentioned that the librarian at the school where I was a student and she was a teacher, she said, there are no such things as bad books. It just
means people. There could be a bad book.
What?
Moon people.
Oh, I'm just saying that the point I was getting at was the line she finished was, there's no such thing as a bad book. You just haven't found the right book.
Oh, no, right. No. There can be bad books out there. Trust me.
I believe that, and I think that we can...
They're few.
This is a topic for another time, but yeah, I get what you're saying, and I got what she was saying, too, and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, if I'm talking to a student who's got to write a report, and he's like, well, I'm like, what do you like to do? Well, I like to play video games. Like, here, I'll flop you know, armada down in front of them and go, here, read this, do a report on this. There's ways to approach everything. You just got to find the way to do it. And right. That's what I'm looking forward to doing.
And hopefully we help grow people's dreams while we're doing this.
Especially our own kids.
Especially our own, even. Just because we're in our 40s doesn't mean that we still don't dream.
My writing has been put on hold, but I haven't neglected it entirely. I'm always thinking about where to go with the story I want to write.
I mean, it's not on hold because of something crazy. You're doing...
Oh, exactly.
You're going back to school so you can, you know, further your career. So that makes perfect sense.
I'm being crazy. I'm taking 6 courses this fall. I never took more than 5 as an undergrad. I'm taking 6. And don't laugh. I am considering, probably won't do this, but I am considering emailing a different professor in a 7th course just to see if I could audit it, because I'm really curious to see what it would be. It's like the history of movies. It's not anything I need to take, but it would be so much fun. The history of cinema and movies.
Yeah, they had a show on Netflix. It was where it talked about Ghostbusters.
Oh, the movies that made us.
Yeah.
That was so much fun to watch.
That was great. I watched it and I was like, oh my God, you know, there's another one that I like. It's called Connected. And it's hosted by Latif Nasser, who's got a PhD in like some type of science. I think history of science is what his PhD is in. And so he just goes all over and he's like showing you how like the clouds in the sky are connected to the internet cloud, which is actually underneath the ocean running through shark proof water hoses and all this other stuff, and how everything connects together. And you're like,
well, wow.
Wow. Like, that's really cool.
The other one I started, and this was from a different chat.
We degraded to pop culture.
No, we're talking Netflix. We're talking movies. I said I'm really considering seeing whether I could fit into my schedule this fall auditing a course on a history of movies or the history of cinema. Like, I think it's like one in this. I'm not sure if it's one in the same or what. But one of the other Netflix shows is just came out recently. It's called High Score, about the history of video.
I haven't started that yet. It's in my queue.
The first episode, you find out where the idea for Space Invaders came from, where the idea for Pac-Man came from, and it's just so much fun. I mean, of course, they make fun of the worst video game of all time, E.T.
E.T., yeah.
And I've actually seen the documentary specifically about that game called Game Over.
Great documentary.
Yeah. Featuring Ernest Cline. Yeah. So, before we degrade too much into pop culture...
Yeah, I'm getting hungry, so...
Yeah, I forgot your food is here when you haven't eaten yet.
Nope.
It's your own fault.
Well, who knows?
Hey, we broadcast hockey games with me chewing a pretzel. You could have eaten your sub.
I could have, but yeah, it was pretty awesome. We'll talk about that later, but right now we're going to wrap this up. We could have an episode about that. We could have some of the guys on, too. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, thanks for listening to The Dads Must Be Crazy. For Craig and Howie and Bobby, thank you for listening. Join us again next week. The Dads Must Be Crazy would like to thank Scott Leffler for putting together our awesome intro to the show. And thank you to Amanda Hodge, who helps us with our designs and logos. Intro and outro music provided by Incomtech.com. Our theme music is Retro Future Clean by Kevin McLeod, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.